Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, TGIF. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today, the second Friday of the month. Already, and so we are talking with the Diet Diva, Tara Collingwood. But first, before we welcome her, just want to remind you all, please grab your insurance policies this weekend. Take some time, look them over, especially the hurricane coverage. You know, you just never know what's going to happen. You know, we experienced that recently. So please just be careful, you know, take some time, make sure you've got everything in place, because they start locking down those policies in turn. You won't be able to do much of anything if we end up within that window. So talk to your insurance company, your advisor, and get that taken care of. In the meantime, Ms. Collingwood, Ms. Diet Diva, good morning. How you doing?
Well, hello, hello. Yeah, thank goodness this latest hurricane looks like it's going to make a right turn. So
yes.
Let's hope it misses
yes.
us, but I hope it doesn't hit yes. all of the East Coast.
Yes, we hope, you know, but they're running through the alphabet quite quickly, so, and it's not over. Season doesn't end until the 30th of November. So,
that's right.
Yeah. But anyway, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, TGIF.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And so you've been running around. You've been on the road. You've been, you know, dealing with – which I was going to ask you. I was running through my mind. Which season or what time of year is busiest for you and why?
You know, it really depends. Summer is a little bit slower, typically, I think because just a lot of people tend to go on vacation, and so, you know, there's not a lot of people around. And my speaking business gets big September, October, because everybody's trying to cram all of the conferences and meetings and all that kind of stuff in. My tennis clients are usually busy like November, December, because they're done. Like right now is US Open, of course. Go Coco Gauff. And Ben Shelton. Yes. We've got some really good American players right now. So quite exciting.
Yes.
I almost thought it was going to be an All-American final for the women, but Madison Keys lost last night. But so I work with a lot of those players. And so obviously they're busy right now, and they're in their tournament season, but then when they are off season, we call it preseason, is like November, December, there's not tournaments. And so they do a lot of more specific training before they head to Australia in January to kick off the tournament year. So yeah, it really just depends on which clients we're talking about of what business, you know, what business I'm busy with, or what's lighter. And it's nice because it kind of ebbs and flows a little bit, you know.
Right, right. You do get a moment to take a breath before you dive back in. So,
yeah,
good to know. So, we talked out a few things. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's talk football. Let's talk tailgating.
Let's talk football.
NFL kicked off last night. We've got, we've got college football. Lots of people heading up to games to tailgate, and maybe just doing parties and tailgates. It's not really called a tailgate, I guess, just a cookout. at their own private homes and, you know, to watch football. So, yeah, maybe we can talk about how to navigate all of that.
Yeah, I mean, it is the season. Tis the season. You know, we start off with football and then we kind of roller coaster into other things such as, you know, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, mm-hmm. and, you know, we're just stuffing our mouths all the time. Well, some of us
that
anyway.
That was an excuse.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, what suggestions do you have, though, to make a good, but, you know, maybe I shouldn't say healthy so much. Maybe there's another word for that, but to just make it appealing and I don't know if I want to use nutritional either.
Yeah. How about better for us that we don't completely sabotage ourselves?
Right. So what do you got in the tailgating department?
Yeah, so, you know, when it comes to tailgating as adults, I think one of the biggest problems is we tend to overconsume the alcohol. And it's so easy to do because you're there, it's several hours long, you know, you're popping open the beers and you're with friends. And, you know, before you know it, you've maybe had four or five, you know, alcoholic drinks and it's like, whoa. And maybe the game hasn't even started yet. So I think we just have to really be conscious of portion of alcohol, because then, as we know, alcohol leads to, you know, other risky behaviors of, you know, whether it's just eating too much or whether it's just being belligerent or, you know, who knows what. But, you know, hopefully nobody's drinking and driving, of course, but I think, you know, alcohol, you know, to me, when I hear tailgate, I think, you know, hamburgers on the grill and I think beer. I don't know. What do you think when you think tailgate?
Well, I have never been a big beer drinker. I mean, I have consumed the alcohol. I don't so much anymore. But, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking wings. I'm thinking maybe some pizza or some sliders. You know, or even, I mean, depending on, you know, what I'm in the mood for or where I'm going, who's hosting, you know, maybe some deviled eggs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so more of that type of stuff, you know, but if it's there, I'll eat it, you know. That's my problem. I'm a sampler, you know. It's like, I want to try a little bit of this, and I want to try a little bit of that, and pretty soon the plate is, you know, running over anyway.
Yeah, and I think that's another good point, is that, you know, there's research on this, that the more variety that is offered to you, the more you tend to eat. And so that's why the all-you-can-eat buffet philosophy, it's not just because it's all-you-can-eat. It's because there's so much darn food there that we tend to, you know, just indulge because, oh, I want to have a bite of this, a bite of that. I want to try that. I want to try that. And so before you know it, like you said, your plate's full. And then, oh, I didn't get everything the first round, so I got to go back and
gotta
try
go
that.
Back.
You know, whatever. So,
you must.
You know, so that's a lot of the problem, is when there's too much variety, we tend to overeat. When there's less variety, you know, it's actually better for us. So, you know, keeping that in mind, I think when we entertain, I know I tend to over offer, you know, like, oh, we need to have 17 appetizers. We need, you know, four different kinds of proteins that we need, you know. And so maybe just, you know, thinking about how are we planning, and whoever you're planning with, you know, like, we don't need six different kinds of chips. We don't need, you know, let's be smart about how we're planning out this tailgate. And because then there's a lot of food waste too. You know, those unopened bag of chips in the humidity here, or the open bag of chips in the humidity, go stale real fast if they, you know, sit out. And so, you know, you end up throwing a lot of stuff away too, which we know with food prices, number one food cost is food waste.
So, all right. One of the things you mentioned was alcohol. So I've been trying a little bit to do different types of drinks. If I'm not necessarily, you know, with a crowd of people and it's just me and my husband, then I've been trying different things. So I've been trying to do, like, maybe seltzer water and splitting juices with seltzer water. And I'm not sure if that's accomplishing what I need to have happen or not, or trying other things. For example, this one brand of, I guess, juices, they've done this version where they have something called like a lime margarita, but it's you know, it's a juice or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's non-alcoholic, and then they've had another one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, a mocktail. And then, so I was like, okay, good, you know, I'll try it. And it's like, it just didn't do it. So what is it? What is the attraction about alcohol, especially in a social setting?
Well, I think some of it is sort of that peer pressure of, well, everybody's having it. Okay, I guess I should have one too. I don't want to be the party pooper. Now, of course, if you're a recovering alcoholic, or if you have an allergy, or if you have, you know, a reason to say absolutely no, you know, then it's an absolute no. And people, you know, that you're close with probably know that. And so they'll have mocktails or soft drinks or something else to do. So obviously we don't all have to drink alcohol, but I think it is sort of that, you know, social, oh, it's great to just crack one open and relax. I mean, alcohol does absolutely relax us. It makes us, you know, it's interesting because it's classified as a depressant, but it actually, of course, makes people jovial and happy and just sort of have a good time. So it's easy to do, you know, it's easy to just say, oh, I want to have that, you know, whether it's a glass of wine in the evening to help relax, or whether it's, you know, that White Claw or you know, beer or whatever it is when you're at the tailgate. But I think you're on the right track. You know, anytime that you can cut anything with seltzer, and that's why, you know, the White Claws, all these seltzer drinks are so popular right now, is, you know, they're low carb, they're sweet, but they're, I mean, you can get them for 100 calories, you know, per can, and still have, you know, a little alcoholic beverage. Now, a lot of times when they're that low calorie, they also are cutting back the percentage of alcohol, which, again, isn't a bad thing that we don't have as much percentage of alcohol in these drinks that won't get us, you know, drunk as fast. So it helps us to slow down a little bit that way, too. So, you know, if I were to say what to drink at, you know, one of these tailgates, I think, you know, the seltzer drinks are popular, and that's a good choice because they are a little bit lower calorie and lower alcohol content. You know, light beers also can be a good one, or some of the ultra type beers that are, again, lower calorie, lower alcohol content. And then if you're mixing your own drinks with, you know, some hard alcohol, I think just going heavier on the seltzer and a little less on whatever the, you know, the distilled spirit that you're using, just to sort of maybe just cut down on the amount of alcohol, especially if you know it's going to be a long 3, 4, 5 hours of tailgating plus game plus, you know, whatever. I mean, it adds up when you're drinking for that long.
You also, too, when you were mentioning beer, there are some non-alcoholic beers out there.
Absolutely. Those are becoming much more popular, too.
Right. So I guess what is it that they have? I mean, how do they make up, I guess, for the taste? And I don't know, because like I said, I don't even really drink. I've never really drank beer, but what is it? Is it something that a person who normally drinks alcohol and they switch to an non-alcoholic beer, is there something that they will miss in terms of the taste? Not necessarily the effect, but the taste.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the effect is going to be different if it doesn't have any alcohol and you're expecting it to have alcohol. But from a taste perspective, yeah, it's a good question how they've perfected the ability to make it taste you know, just like an alcoholic beer, and still have that taste of a beer without the alcohol in there. So it must be in how they're brewing the, you know, the hops and the barley and all of that. I don't really know. But
okay.
I think that is a great option for someone who, again, wants to still feel like they're part of the party, have that drink in their hand, and but yet they don't want the alcohol for some reason or another. And I think it's a wonderful option. And it's not just the non-alcoholic beers that have become so popular lately, but I've seen this trend with zero alcohol spirits. So they have like zero alcohol vodka. And I'm like, what's the point?
You just said something that I hear a lot. It's like, okay, what's the point? I even hear that with coffee because I drink decaf. I kind of almost have to now. But when my mother had her first heart attack years back, decades back, she got off of caffeine. And so we all kind of did. And so I haven't really done caffeine on a regular basis in quite a while, and I can tell somewhat when I do have it. So, but and then I get people that say, well, you know, you're drinking decaf coffee. What's the point? Or you're drinking a non-alcoholic beer. What's the point? Do people, actually go in when they're buying these drinks, are they, let's say, going in search for that one ingredient? Like, are they going in search for the alcohol or are they going in search for the caffeine?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if you're doing, obviously, the decaf coffee, you must enjoy the taste of coffee. Otherwise, why would you do it? So you must enjoy the taste of beer. You must enjoy the taste of or whatever you're mixing that vodka with. I mean, I haven't tried any of these zero alcohol spirits to see how they taste. But if you're looking for, you know, that taste of what you used to have maybe for that alcoholic drink, it has to come down to taste. Otherwise, yeah, why would someone have that versus just, you know, drink a Coke Zero on your own? And, you know, why put zero alcohol rum in a rum and Coke if you're, you know, why not just have the Coke? You know what I'm saying? So, it must come down to that taste because, yeah, I don't need the effect of the, or don't want the effect of the alcohol or in your case, the caffeine. You know, from that coffee because it is affecting my health in a negative way. And so I've had to, you know, cut that out.
We are here with the Diet Diva Tara Collingwood, and we were talking about tailgating, which we're still going to talk about a little bit, but we were also talking about, you know, the need for having that drink to socialize and, you know, how you can make healthier choices both in the food and the drink. Or better choices, better for you yourself. This is Dee's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back. Well, welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Happy Friday. This is the second Friday of the month. We're here with Tara Collingwood, and we were talking a little tailgating, and we're going to talk a few other things, too. If you have questions or comments, yes, we are opening up for questions or comments. The number is 516-387-1944. Maybe you have a favorite beverage or a favorite food that you use for tailgating that is very popular, and you found a way to make it better for you and everybody else. So you, please share that with us. But one of the things I asked you about earlier this week was are there foods that help provide, let's say, a little more stamina? And we're going to get into another subject, too, when we talk about that. Because, you know, some of us are having these very long or taxing days, you know, or get into situations, for example, some of the, you know, stressful situations. I'm thinking about, you know, I have family up where the hurricane hit up in Perry, Florida, and stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff at once that you're considering you're going through, and sometimes you forget to make the right choice in terms of what you're eating, you know. So sometimes you maybe want to try to incorporate foods that maybe provide a little bit more stamina, if there's such a thing. So that's what I was asking.
Yeah, that's such a good question. Stamina per se, I have not seen any research studies using that particular word. You know, we look at energy, we look at, health, we look at, you know, some of those kinds of things. So, I mean, I think energy and stamina are similar. You know, mm-hmm. if you're running out of energy, then you don't have any stamina to me.
Right.
So from an energy perspective, you know, it's really trying to watch, it's very similar to how I would teach a diabetic how to eat. And
okay.
it's, you know, trying to spread your food out throughout the day so you're not eating large quantities at any time of the day, because that's just giving yourself too much energy, too many calories, too much glucose at any one time. And then your body just says, I don't know what to do with all this, and so I'm going to have to store it. Meanwhile, you eat too much. How do you feel? Sleepy. How do you feel? Tired. How do you feel? Guilty. How do you feel? Like, usually when you eat too much, maybe you're sitting back going, oh, I feel fat and happy, but no, most people are like, oh, man, I shouldn't have done that. You know, feels good going in, yeah. but you know, at the end of the day, it's like, man. So in the moment and, you know, after, there's maybe a little regret and, you know, and then that can affect our energy, physically. You know, our mood affects our physical energy as well. So I think spreading food throughout the day, trying not to have too much at one time. And then the what you're eating, you know, we know that fried foods and high sugar and, you know, some of those things can give us a little bit of indigestion, or it can, you know, spike, like in the case of sugars, you know, high spikes in our glucose. Well, what goes up must come down. And so then you get sort of that lull from that, you know, spike in your glucose, where, you know, you get a little bit of low glucose or low energy. So, you know, trying to have fiber, having protein, having good fats with the food that you're eating, instead of just having some of these kind of higher sugar or high carbohydrate foods on their own. And that's one of the keys to how a diabetic eats is, you know, if you want to have rice, rice is very high glycemic, well, then have some protein with it. You know, don't just eat rice cakes by themselves or white rice by itself. Not that you'd probably sit and eat white rice by itself, but, you know, white bread by itself. So always have a protein to help kind of buffer how quickly that blood sugar is going to go up. And that mm-hmm. will give you that, you know, that little bit of, like you're saying, stamina. And then you also have to look at other lifestyle factors. I mean, I can't not say, well, what else is happening? Are you sitting all day? Are you not getting sleep? Are you hydrated? Are you, you know, you get, like you mentioned the caffeine, like, are you, you know, getting too much caffeine? Are you not doing caffeine when you used to do caffeine? You know, caffeine can affect our energy levels a lot. So, you know, you kind of mm-hmm. have to look at all of those things and not just say, oh, it's the, you know, one food that I ate that's, you know, giving me a problem or is going to be my solution to having more stamina. I think it's a
right.
lot of different factors that play into it.
So it's like, okay, don't just, you know, you're feeling a little tired, don't just run and get an energy drink. I mean, you've got to,
right. well,
because part of the thing
fix.
Is you've got to figure
yeah.
out why you're tired,
exactly.
not just get for a quick fix.
Right. Yeah, but that's what we do. Hello, Americans.
Yeah.
We always want the quick fix. We want that, you know, hey, yeah, just go do that. That'll make you feel better in the moment, and you don't have to do any work for it. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, we know that regular exercise is going – people who exercise regularly have better stamina because their heart rates tend to be lower. Their oxygen uptake tends to be better. You know, their heart is pumping more efficiently. Like, there's so many things that, you know, you've got exercise in the moment, like, oh, I feel, you know, good, or I feel that high after the exercise or whatever, but it's really a compound effect of someone who's fit has better stamina. And
yeah.
so fitness levels is a huge part of, you know, kind of this word stamina of, you know, am I able to keep going, you know, throughout the day? And, you know, if you have little kids, if you have grandkids that you're running after, you know, it's amazing,
right.
you know, that you realize how little stamina you have, how out of shape you are when you're just, you know, maybe you're not running a marathon, but even just trying to keep up with, like you said, daily life.
Right. I mean, it's amazing to me how we went from this country that we're known for, you know, hard work and, you know, building up, you know, a country, you know, we went through, I guess, the Industrial Revolution and then other things. And, you know, then we
got with, I guess I have a love-hate relationship with technology, but it seems like that, you know, we invested a lot in technology to kind of help us out, but then I think we overinvested and to the point where we let ourselves off the hook for so many things. We've gotten to the point, like you said, we don't really know how to do much of anything than maybe sit down in front of a television and eat way too much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too easy. It's too easy. You know, our default for a lot of people is, well, I need to relax at night. And so I put my feet up in front of the TV, and then pretty soon someone pulls out some food or, you know, and I'm not saying we can't sit and relax in front of the TV. I mean, that's a pastime that's been going on for, you know, however many years since TV was invented. But I think we just, you know, again, I remember growing up, we had a limit of 1 hour. 1 hour of TV, that was all you got. And remember, we didn't have devices back then. So now as we're policing our children and we're like, you know, you're only allowed 3 hours on your device per day, and I'm going to look and see, you know, how much screen time you've had for the day. And I'm like, 3 hours? Like, that's an insane amount of screen time. But if you look at your own screen time, you're like, holy crap. Yeah, that's not very much.
it goes by quite
so fast. Yeah.
But the thing is, too, you know, as kids, we would go out and play. So, I mean,
exactly.
The TV was there. And then plus it was black and white, so it wasn't as interesting as it is now. And like you said, we didn't have devices. But then we had things like, well, and I'm dating myself, but I don't care. We had things like jump rope, and roller skates, and bikes, and, you know.
Of course.
It's just like, you know, get back in before the sun goes down, okay? You know, and
yep.
Depending on what time of year that is, that's almost 9 o'clock at night, depending
exactly.
on what, you know.
Exactly.
And depending on whether it's a school night or, you know, a weekend yep. or whatever the case may be. You know, now... Then you have screens, and then a lot of times you're eating and drinking while you're in front of the screen.
Of course, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Especially if it's not a phone screen and it's just, you know, your iPad or the television screen, and you've got hands available.
Hands, yeah, hands free.
To a potato chip bag.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, so. All right. So let's maybe talk about how, if we want to, let's say, occupy our hands and occupy our, you know, bodies a little bit, getting up and going into the kitchen and maybe fixing something that, you know, for that tailgate or for that, you know, for the, you know, the game at home or whatever. What types of snacking do you recommend that's not going to make you feel so guilty and not going to make you feel so sluggish?
Yeah. So, you know, of course, you know my answer is going to be fruits and vegetables. However,
yes.
I have been to many a party where that tray of vegetables is sitting there and like two carrots have been eaten out of it. So,
yeah.
You know, don't bring the boring just tray of fruits and of vegetables, you know. Think about how can I incorporate some of these vegetables into other things that are tasty. So, for example, you know, guacamole is a fruit, and it's got tons of vitamins and minerals. Yeah, it has a little bit of fat and whatever, and usually you take a tortilla chip, but guess what? A corn tortilla chip is a whole grain. Corn is a whole grain. And so, you know, sometimes we look at these foods as quote-unquote junk food, but actually they have some nutritional value, you know, to them. Think about bruschetta. You know, maybe you make a bruschetta to bring to that game or, you know, party or whatever.
Right.
Well, now you've got a bunch of chopped, you know, chopped tomatoes and onions and garlic and maybe a little bit of cheese on there, you know, sprinkled Parmesan or whatever. I'm getting myself hungry. I don't know. How about you? this is the hazard of my job. I talk about food all day. So now we've got, you know, and you can get a thin toast point, so it's not a big old thick, you know, piece of French bread, but maybe just a thin, you know, toast to put that bruschetta on. So, you know, just thinking about, like, what can I do to get maybe a black bean corn salad, maybe a, you know, so just trying to think outside the box of, like, how can I incorporate some of these fruits and vegetables so that they're fun. You know, put that fruit on a kebab and have some, you know, yummy yogurt dipping sauce with it. So it's not just, again, that, you know, bowl of fruit that nobody touches, but rather it's like, oh, this is fun, or make a little fruit pizza for a dessert, you know, that you, or so, you know, you can kind of incorporate some of the quote unquote healthier foods into dishes that have other fun stuff in them that make them, you know, taste better, but it doesn't take away the nutritional value of the tomato when you chop it up and put it on top of a toast point and call it bruschetta, you know? So you can still get a lot of nutritional value without just feeling like it's that tray of vegetables.
So let me ask this. The chips with dip versus the tortilla chip, corn chip or whatever with guac
mm-hmm.
or with salsa.
Yep.
So which one? And I'm assuming.
Yeah, so, I mean, think about, a potato chip in French onion dip is nothing and nothing. I mean, there's no nutritional value in either of those versus mm-hmm. the corn chip and the salsa. Salsa is also chopped tomato. Yeah, a little salt. But, you know, also chopped tomato. So there's nutritional value there, kind of like the bruschetta mm-hmm. And, you know, the guac. And so, you know, thinking about how can I, you know, get more of those vegetables in there, maybe even, you know, the spinach artichoke dip. Versus a French onion dip. You're going to have some, you know, some cream cheese and some yummy deliciousness, creamy deliciousness there, but you're also still going to get some spinach and some artichoke. Mm-hmm. And making salads too that are more exciting. That can be a way to get more vegetables in you as well. I mean, I have some great recipes for some kale salads. I made a salad last weekend that had some sliced, you know, this time of year, sliced peaches. It had avocado. And I threw together just a really quick dressing that was just lemon juice, olive oil, and a little bit of mustard. And, you know, shake it up and pour that over it. You know, the lemon juice just gives it that nice tart flavor. I think I had some gorgonzola in there too, some toasted almonds, slivered almonds. So, you know, there's ways to still get nutritional value into, you know, into foods that do taste really good.
Yeah, because, like, for example, I was thinking about, you know, I've had lettuce wraps before that are pretty good.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can put a little, you know, chop up either some chicken in there or maybe some ground turkey or something in there or whatever. And I thought about, and there's good and bad with this, so you can tell me. You know, a lot of places now, restaurants I go to, and I said I was going to try this at home, do the lettuce wedges where they cut, a portion, but then they have the creamy dressing and the bacon and all that kind of stuff. But like you said, in some respect, though, you are still getting a vegetable of some sort, right?
Yeah. The other thing that you can do with the lettuce is wrap your burger, you know, do the lettuce burger instead of the bun. So now you've got, you know, you've got that burger on the grill, and then you've got these big, beautiful iceberg lettuce pieces that you can just put that on. And it's so crispy and cool. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a nice contrast with that burger when you do, you know, the lettuce as the bun. So, and everybody says, oh, iceberg lettuce doesn't have any nutritional value. It does. It has some nutritional value. It's still going to, you know, give you something. Now, if it has more blue cheese dressing than salad, then, okay. But, you know, so we have to be careful a little bit. But, any kind of, or maybe get a little bit of a darker green, you know, do some romaine. Get some heads of romaine and use that as your lettuce wrap for your burger. And that's going to be even crunchier and more stable for your burger to hold that burger too. So, you know, romaine has a lot more nutritional value than iceberg lettuce. There's ways to, you know, still do some of the, you don't have to do kale and spinach all the time. You can use some of those other greens and still get nutritional value from those.
Yeah. And then too, because when you were talking about the lettuce-wrapped burger. I had not done that before, but I went to, and that's one of the things now when I try to look and see, you know, what options there are at various fast food places. Now, like Five Guys does a lettuce-wrapped burger, And they do kind of like a veggie burger, too, of sorts. It's not necessarily a burger, but it's just, you know, lettuce and some other things like the grilled mushrooms and some other things. Very, very good,
yep.
Both of them, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I think the first time I saw that was at BurgerFi. They do them, too. Like
that. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think they call it green style.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I guess I want to talk to you about, too, and ask you about, because now you can go places where they are doing – they're having vegetable alternatives, but I'm curious in terms of whether or not what they're doing to the vegetables is healthy. I mean, you're saying to yourself, oh, okay, I'll get the balsamic glazed Brussels sprout, you know, where, you know, it'll – kick the Brussels sprout up a notch, but then are you really doing yourself a service or a disservice by getting that as an alternative versus, let's say, the French fries or something like that?
Right, right. Yeah, a lot of those really, really, really yummy Brussels sprouts they have at restaurants are deep fried, unfortunately. I was heartbroken when I realized that. I was like, are you kidding me? That's why they're so good and they can't make these at home. I'm trying to make them as good, and I'm like, I just don't know how they get them. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, they deep fry them.
So,
you're right. It's, you know, it is a fine line of, you know, let's take that Brussels sprout, and now if we, you know, dip it in hot bubbly oil, how much nutritional value really is left at the end of the day? There's still going to be some in the Brussels sprout, but you are compromising with a heck of a lot of, you know, oil and fat added.
Right, and then I've seen the green beans with the Parmesan cheese on them, which I like that too.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume also too that that's another trade-off.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess you've got to pick and choose your poisons. It's almost like unless you are the person that's actually doing the preparation of the food, you know, you're kind of almost at the mercy of you know, other people, and you kind of, let's say, have to prepare. Like, I have this one cousin, and I love the way she cooks and everything, but it is, you know, down-home cooking and everything, so it's one of those days where it's like, okay.
With the oil.
If you are going to the Super Bowl party, you probably maybe should have a carrot for breakfast or something. I don't know.
Balance your day.
Yes, balance the day, you know. And I think that's kind of what you have always been saying on the show is, you know, having to do stuff in moderation. You know, it's like, well, if you're going to do that, then you need to do this to kind of balance things out or modify stuff.
Yeah. Go for a walk, go for a longer walk, you know, balance it with a little bit of exercise and balance it with what else you're doing for the day. So if I know I'm going out to dinner and it's that place that has those fried Brussels sprouts and I just love them, okay, well, you know what, I'm going to try to be a little bit better at lunch and, you know, not starve myself, not skip, but just try to balance it out so that.
Yeah, so. Also, too, you know, if you're going to the game and you're having something to
eat. My phone went blank for a second there. Sorry about that.
That's okay. But I was going to say, if you're going to the game or you're going someplace special and, you know, there's halftime or something like that, y'all get up and do some line dancing or something.
Oh,
so during the intermission. You know.
I love that idea. We got to get together this football season.
Yeah, we should. Sounds like a plan.
Do some line dancing, have some bruschetta. We'll be the life of the party.
Yeah, definitely. But so now we talked a little bit. You touched a little bit on, always the possibility of overeating or eating the wrong thing, and that makes you kind of sleepy. But we need to talk. We wanted to talk a little bit, I think, about the whole sleeping issue and lack of sleep and I guess things related to sleep. So, get us started on that. What is it that makes us feel that? I was talking to my husband about this morning. As a matter of fact, you know, it's like, what is it that makes us feel that we can sacrifice sleep?
Yes. Well, that's a story. That's a story we tell ourselves because we want to be able to live without as much sleep because, you know, it takes hours out of your day. And, you know, I don't got time for that. But, you know, when people say, oh, I don't need to sleep, I can sleep when I'm dead, I'm like, eh, careful what you wish for, because
really?
We've found that, you know, sleep, lack of sleep, poor sleep quality, you know, has been linked to Alzheimer's and dementia and Parkinson's and some of those brain disorders that can tend to happen as we get older. But, you know, also, I mean, you name it, you name a disease and there's probably a study linking lack of sleep or poor sleep to it. I mean, we're really finding that sleep, and it's not just quantity, but it's really about quality. And that's
right.
The hard part is because you can't just snap your fingers and go, okay, body, I want 1.5 hours of REM tonight. And I'd like 1.25 hours of deep tonight. And then I want, you know, you can't just snap your fingers and go, okay, this is the kind of quality of sleep I want. And these are the phases I want to be in. Your body dictates that based on environment, based on, you know, stress, based on what's going on. You know, are you in pain? My husband pulled something in his back yesterday, so he was tossing and turning all night last night, and that's waking me up. And, you know, so there's so many factors that go into the quality of sleep that we have. So, you know, I'm always encouraging people that if you have a chronic issue, you know, when it comes to a quality of sleep, like the neighbor's dog wakes you up every single night, or your dog is pressed up against you and you wake up in a pool of sweat because you got this hot dog next to you, or you've got, you know, whatever issues, your kids wake you up all the time. Like, we got to do something about this. We got to figure out how to minimize those disruptions to our sleep, because it does absolutely break that cycle. You know, our body goes through the deep, the REM, and the light sleep many cycles throughout the night. And that's why sometimes you wake up wide awake because you've completed a cycle and you're like, wow, it's only 1:30 in the morning, but I'm feeling like I could get up right now. But then other times you wake up and you're like, oh my gosh, because you were in the middle of REM sleep, in the middle of a dream, and you wake up and now you're super groggy, or wake up in the middle of your deep sleep, you know, cycle. So it depends on where you are in that cycle when you wake up. And, you know, that can dictate, you know, how groggy you are. But anyway, so, you know, whatever disrupts those sleep cycles, you know, we gotta think about that, whether it's temperature, light, noise. You know, those tend to be the top three, is temperature, light, and noise. You know, what is preventing me from falling asleep, or what is waking me up in the middle of the night?
Or as you get older, it's your bladder.
Yep.
we need to, I mean, no one wants to talk about it, no one wants to admit it, but yeah, as you get older, that happens too. So you've got to time a lot of stuff. You've got to time,
absolutely.
I think, how much
drink
you
less in the evening, and
drink less. You've also got to time your sugar in terms of when you stop eating the sugar, if you eat a lot of sugar. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about that you mentioned was dementia and sleep and everything. I heard recently, though, there was a study that talks about, you know, they've promoted melatonin a lot now, and you can find it, you know, on over the counter and stuff like that. But there was a study recently that suggested that melatonin can also be linked to dementia. Were you familiar with that?
I have seen some recent questions around melatonin, and, you know, I think people take it because they think, oh, it's natural and, you know, it's not going to hurt me. But I think it's being studied more and more, and we're getting some of the studies that have been going for longer. And some of those results are coming out now that it may not be quite as innocent as we thought it was. I think we're still learning a lot, so I don't know that we have any definitive answers to that. But I would say, yeah, don't just pop it like it's candy and automatically take it if you don't feel like you absolutely, you know, think it's helping you, or, you know, need that to help you sleep.
So, and that does concern me because, yes, I mean, I've come to appreciate more the value of sleep and the value of, for example, having, you know, setting the temperature right. So I'm constantly adjusting my temperature. There's a temperature for when I'm up during the day, and there's a temperature at night when I'm going to sleep,
mm-hmm.
you know, or close, you know.
Yeah.
So I really got to look into, I think, a thermostat that has a timer. I'm sure there's got to be some. But anyway,
oh, yeah.
But also, too, I'm looking into the quality of the sheets. You know, don't give me a sheet
yep.
that feels like sandpaper or it's going to turn into sandpaper soon. You know, so, I mean, there's a lot of factors in terms of getting a good night's sleep. I tell my husband there's this one resort that I went to for a convention in Phoenix, Arizona, and I've been for, like, decades trying to find the mattress pad or whatever that they use, because I tell them, I'm like, that was the best sleep ever, ever. So, but yeah,
love
you know,
it.
I mean, I've come to value, so now that I've gotten, I guess, a little older and understanding it a little bit more, I'm willing to spend a little bit more on those things to try to get the best night's sleep possible. Those are things I can control somewhat. But then I have mm-hmm. a schedule, too, that does not allow me the full 8 hours of sleep. So, and that is, I guess, problematic. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, if I can do these things, you know, what do I do about not being able to get the full 8 hours? And then sometimes my mm-hmm. body won't even let me get the full 8 hours. Like you were talking about waking up at 1 o'clock and being wide awake.
Yeah.
You know, and part of me wants to, like, oh, well, I guess I could go in the office and I could do X, Y, and Z. It's like, no.
I can get a lot done right now.
Yeah. But I've also been told that you don't make yourself, if you wake up, that you shouldn't make yourself stay there and toss and turn. Is
right.
that
Yeah, there's
true
a 20-minute rule. Yep. So if you lay there for more than 20 minutes, now, you know, give or take, now it has become a stressful environment because I can't sleep. And so you should get up and stay in a dark, you know, darker area. Don't turn all the lights on. Don't, you know, start reading your email and start, you know, doing social media and stuff like that. But just, you know, maybe go out into the couch in the dark living room, kind of sit there for a little while, maybe meditate a little bit, visualize a little bit until you start feeling sleepy again. And then go back into the bed and then you should be able to, you know, fall asleep. Mm-hmm. But if you stay in that, you know, quote unquote stressful environment where you're tossing and turning and tossing and turning, if it's been more than about 20 minutes, then, you know, that's what the sleep researchers say is now you've just created the stressful environment instead of the restful environment you're looking for. So you need to remove yourself from the environment until the stress has gone away and then go back. Which makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, because, yeah, you don't want to, you know, walk into the bedroom, look at your bed and it's like, oh, God, it's going to be another one of those nights. You don't want
uh-huh.
that. Yeah, so, but there are so many factors involved with the sleeping thing. You know, I think I mentioned earlier caffeine being one of those. I think we've
mm-hmm.
talked before about alcohol and sugar and stuff like that. So
yep.
are there cutoff points or cutoff periods? And are there foods? I've got teas that are called sleepy time.
Okay. Yeah.
Do they actually work? That's my other
well,
thing.
Well, it's not laced you know. With Ambien.
Okay. No, no. Oh, gosh. No.
It's not laced with Ambien, the sleepy time tea. So it's not going to be that powerful, you know, that, oh, my gosh, wow, all of a sudden I can't keep my head up. But
okay.
what it's meant to do is just sort of relax you. So if it's a chamomile, if it's a non-caffeinated, we know that warmth suits us. So that's why that warm bath, warm shower, you know, warm cup of tea, you hear warm milk,
mm-hmm.
you know, any of that warmth before bed helps to relax you. And you want to be
mm-hmm.
in a relaxed state when you go to bed. The temperature, though, you're right, it should be down, you know, the temperature in the house. So warmth helps
mm-hmm.
you relax, but your core temperature actually has to drop in order for you to fall asleep. believe it or not, and or stay asleep in that good, you know, in that good sleep. So that's why the temperature in the room should be at about between 65 and 68 is what they recommend.
Really?
To have that, yeah, to get that core temperature down to where it should be to be able to fall asleep. But the number one thing really when it comes to sleep is a consistent schedule. And I know it's hard to do, but, you know, staying consistent with your schedule, give or take an hour-ish, you know. So if you want to stay up a little later on the weekends and sleep a little later, okay, but it can't be 3, 4, 5 hours different. So if you go to bed at 9 during the week and you stay up till 1 a.m. on the weekend, no, or sleep till noon when normally you get up at 6, you know, like that's what will mess you up. And then Monday comes too quickly, and now Sunday night you can't fall asleep, and then you wake up Monday sleep-deprived, and boom, you know, now you've set yourself on a bad course, and it's only Monday. So,
yeah,
so that's
unless
why,
it's a holiday,
you know,
Monday
schedule,
does come too quickly.
Yeah, the schedule is really the biggest thing for sleep, is to keep yourself, give or take, an hour-ish, is what I always say, however you want to interpret the ish, but, you know, not five. But maybe an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours different. But, you know, try not to make it go much longer than that you're going to bed and getting up on the weekend versus during the week.
Right. So, yeah, the temperature, and it's funny, though, and I don't know, I guess everybody's body is different and adjusts. For a while, it was for me like 68 or 69. Now, though, I can't do necessarily that cold anymore. Let me just preface this, everybody. I have a thyroid issue, so it's been going back and forth. So now I'm up to maybe like 72, 73. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it's been going back and forth. And then I will adjust the temperature. I watch my husband sleep and I adjust the temperature because I can tell when he's too hot or too cold. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing worse than waking up in a pool of sweat. Ugh.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, I mean, you got to also pay attention to, you know, what your sheets are made of, you know, because it does make a difference, you know.
Yep. Well, as you were saying, I mean, the sleep industry is almost as big as the supplement industry now. It's like, man, you can get sheets, you can get cool technology, this, that, the other, and, you know, sleep masks and sound machines.
Mattresses.
And, I mean, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, the mattresses,
so,
too.
Yeah.
Not
even to mention the mattresses. Yeah.
Yeah. And we got sold some sheets, and then they were like, oh, these are cool and everything. I told my husband, I'm like, you know, like, never again. I'm not listening to it.
Well, that's the hard part, is that it could be a total home run for someone else, and then you get it, and then you've used it once and slept in it, and who wants that back again, you know?
That's true.
So it is.
Yeah.
It's hard to buy stuff for sleep because you have to try it out yourself in order to know whether it is the next best thing.
Let me ask this. I have noticed more over-the-counter sleep supplements for children, and that troubles me a lot. I mean, I'm sure that there may be some issues that some children are having for whatever reason, but I'm thinking that that's something that you go to your doctor for, and they prescribe something if necessary, maybe. But the supplements on the shelves for the kids for sleep and for stress and for this and for that, I'm like, well, wait, you know, the children are not fully formed, you know, and you've got to watch giving them stuff because just like they say, you shouldn't give them adult doses of cough syrup, you know, because their bodies receive and process this stuff differently than adults. So that has me kind of concerned.
No, it is. And you should be concerned. You know, we talked about the melatonin and the studies that are coming out for adults, but there are, you know, melatonin for kids, and it's smaller doses, but it's still, you know, for their body size going to be, you know, approximately the same dose that I would take for my body size. And so Yeah, you do have to be careful with those kinds of things. And I would say don't just default to giving it to them again, thinking, oh, it's natural, it's fine. Because, yeah, just because it's natural doesn't mean that it doesn't have effects on the brain and long-term effects. And we just don't know yet. We just don't know yet, really, with the melatonin and valerian root and some of these other ones that are targeted towards us with sleep. We don't really know what some of the long-term effects are because, like you said, they're popping up all over the place. And, you know, some of them have been around forever, but just because it's been around forever doesn't mean it's studied forever. Mm-hmm. You know, research doesn't always equal how long it's been on the shelves, especially with dietary supplements. You know, they don't have to go through the same rigor as prescription drugs. And so a lot of them
right.
aren't studied very much.
Is there any type of move to correct that, to make that change so that these supplements do have to go through a more rigorous review?
Well, what's happening is the supplement companies themselves do a lot of the research because then they can show, but then people are like, well, but that's, you know, and hopefully they are doing it the right way so that it's scientifically, you know, rigorous. But the FDA will, you know, will research things or will look into things, but usually only after an adverse event happens. And so that's when you start seeing, like with a lot of the diet pills and diet supplements that have come out, you know, they come out and then after someone dies, after, you know, something happens is when they go, oh, okay, well, we'll look into this and then, you know, we can pull it off the shelf. But unfortunately, it's oftentimes a knee-jerk reaction rather than a, okay, let's get this approved before it goes onto the shelf.
I really hate that. That is about as bad as I remember working at a fast food joint in high school that was on this intersection that did not have a light at the time. And they're like, well, you have to have 7 fatalities before you consider putting a light up.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Really? That, yeah. So, it reminds me of that. It's like, you know, a certain amount of people have to be harmed. Just like when they do recalls, you have to show something adverse for a certain amount of time or affecting a certain amount of people before they say, oh, well, you know, maybe we should not have this out there.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do this. So, okay. Let's we got a couple minutes left. Let's bottom line some stuff. Tailgate. What do you say? Bottom line.
Bottom line, enjoy. But there's always a but. But just, you know, portion. It's not even about the what, it's about the how much. Portion with alcohol, portion with the yummy dips and chips and all that kind of stuff. You know, just know that you're in for the long haul, of, you know, hours before the game, during the game, whatever. So, you know, pace yourself and watch those portions.
And do your line dancing during intermission.
There you go.
Okay.
And get some activity.
So, bottom line to sleep.
Bottom line of sleep is stick to a consistent schedule and look at what is disrupting, if anything, your sleep. You know, what are your biggest barriers? Is it because you can't fall asleep? Is it because you're waking up in the middle of the night? Is it because, you know, what are your biggest barriers? Like you said, your biggest barrier is I don't have enough hours in the day. My schedule doesn't allow me to get 8 hours. Well, okay, well then let's look at the schedule. Like something's got to give if we're not going to be able to, you know, be in bed for the required number of hours that are going to be good for my health. So, you know, looking at what are my major barriers to not getting that good night's sleep.
Okay. And a good night's sleep hours-wise, we're
seven
usually
to nine.
Told 8, 7 to 9.
Yep.
Okay.
7 to 9.
All right. There we go. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out. And yeah, let's figure out a way to get together this fall and see if we can work out a routine for the game. So, who's your
Sounds
team,
good.
By the way? Who's your team?
I went to Purdue, so I'm a Big Ten girl,
okay.
and the Green Bay Packers are my team.
Okay, should be interesting without Mr. Rogers there anymore.
I know. We'll see. Well, they play the Bears on Sunday, so that's a good first game to see what happens.
Okay. Well, I still say go Bucks. Anyway, thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I'm your host, G. Be well, be safe, be blessed. Enjoy your weekend. Stay safe. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.